Hello, and welcome to the 33rd Legislative District's live telephone town hall. My name is Max, and I'll be moderating tonight's event. This is a live telephone town hall. You are being called this evening because you are a constituent in the 33rd District, and your legislators, Senator Kaiser, Representative Orwell, and Representative Gregerson, want to hear from you on issues that matter most. So if you'd like to ask a question this evening of the legislators, please press star 3 on your phone now, or at any point during the call. We'd like to get to as many questions as possible this evening, so if you have concerns about the state budget, education, transportation, jobs, or other issues in your community, then please stay on the line, listen, and press star 3 if you have a question. And now I'd like to open up for some brief remarks from Senator Kaiser, Representative Orwell, and Representative Gregerson.
Thank you so much, Max. I'm Senator Karen Kaiser, and I want to thank everybody who is listening in tonight as we engage with our community about all of the issues that are important to you and that we're working on here in Olympia. We're about halfway through this session, and we still have a bit to go. The budgets are about to come out, so we're right on the edge of some really big work. I want to turn the microphone over to my colleagues in the House now so they can introduce themselves.
Great. Thank you, Karen. This is Tina Orwell, and I want to thank you for the honor of representing the 33rd Legislative District. Yes, we're in the middle of the session, and we have a lot of great activities going on. I'm especially excited because we're really looking at making a huge investment in schools, and I think that's going to be a very important work we do this session. But there's a lot of other issues important to our community, and I'd really like to hear about them tonight, so thank you.
And as your newest representative, I'm so happy to be sitting here next to some fine representatives and a senator. I'm very excited being halfway through session and that we're going to be talking about budget and policy cutoff. We'll be here next week, and tomorrow will be a very big day in the House around transportation, which I think we all agree on. We need a complete transportation package this year. It's time.
Great.
Thank you for those opening remarks. And if you have a question for the legislators, please press star 3 on your phone, and you'll be connected to a volunteer who will take your call. And now, to start us off this evening, we have a question from Susan in Kent. Susan wrote us earlier today with a concern about oil trains. Susan writes, "I live in the Lakes Complex, and one of my favorite sounds at night are the train whistles as they go through town. Lately, I've been hearing a lot of those whistles, and I'm starting to worry about the cargo the trains are carrying. If a train carrying oil or shale oil derailed with the same disastrous results as in Quebec, it's a fair bet that my neighborhood would be severely affected." Susan wants to know what legislation is going through our legislature right now. What requirements will you support for these types of shipments, and what's going on with the safety of oil trains right now?
Thank you, Karen. This is Tina. This is an incredibly important question. You know, our district is really impacting that by trains, and Kent, that's actually considered a hot spot when you look at the train map of our state. And I know myself and others have been participating with King County Executive Dow Constantine and the Mayor of Seattle around train safety. And so we have a very good bill that was introduced by Representative Farrell, HB 1449, and it is about train safety. And some of that safety is really having information, really understanding how many trains are going through our state, what are they carrying, and then we're looking at safety measures on these trains and really how could our first responders be equipped to be able to respond to any crisis in our state. So it's a very important first step that I feel really good about.
And I want to also add that over in the Senate, Susan, we have passed a bill over to the House regarding oil trains. It wasn't a bill that I was very pleased with because I don't think it was strong enough. But I want to say we did add one amendment that is critical and is the first of its kind in the nation that requires that the trains that have oil tankers have adequate staffing. Because, you know, if there is an accident, the first responders can't deal with uncoupling train cars. That's something that the staff, that the workers on the trains have to do for the first responders to deal with the problem. So that's a really piece of good policy I hope will be incorporated in the House bill.
Thank you very much for those answers, and thank you, Susan, for that great question. I think it's something a lot of us think about as we hear those trains these days. And if you have a question about oil trains or the environment or any other issue, we invite you to please press *3 on your phone, and you'll be connected with a volunteer who will take your question. Next, we have a question from Elvira in Tacoma, a question about seniors and how we can address the cost of living with seniors. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. Please go ahead with your question.
That's okay. It's done now. Seriously, I appreciate the opportunity to ask someone who would be in a position to know what the popular thought would be on this. But so many of us are retired. We're on fixed incomes. And we need some relief, possibly in the form of having the amount of money that we're charged for our land taxes reduced in some way. You know, if you're an income of a certain amount, you get a reduction. But that should be changed to be more accommodating to people who are more in need of it because of the cost of living going up. And I appreciate somebody addressing that, if they could, please.
Sure. Elvira, this is Senator Kaiser. This is a difficult issue. We did have a bill to increase the amount of income a senior could have to still be forgiven their property taxes. And it was proposed that it was increased from $35,000 to $40,000 a year. But I have to tell you, that bill died. It did not get out of the Senate in time for cutoff. But it is an alive issue that people are concerned about, and will, I'm sure, see further legislative initiatives on this issue.
And the other thing I would say, just in general, is we realize there's a lack of affordable housing for seniors. And I know one of the projects that's been prioritized from our district is called Vantage Point, which would be built in Renton and would provide some beautiful new housing that would be affordable for seniors. And I think all of us are supporting that project.
Thank you very much. And if you have a question for your legislators, please press *3 on your phone. We want to hear what you think, and we want to hear your concerns. And next, moving us right along, we have a question from Julie in Normandy Park about a very hot topic, e-cigarettes. Julie, are you with us?
I am with you, yes.
Please go ahead with your question.
Thank you. So I manage an e-cigarette store here in Burien. I live in Normandy Park, and I've helped over 1,400 folks quit smoking in the last 2 years. I know the bills are coming up for a vote. The last time that we looked at the tax, it was 95%, although I did see something today that hit that said it could be 60%. In addition to strictly regulating the flavors and internet business, I mean, this would just really impact us. In the unlikely chance that we stay in business, our store alone would pay an additional $250,000 in additional taxes if this is passed. And if you pass it, you'll put the stores out of business. So when children do start smoking, I know they say this is all about the children, when children do start smoking, which they will, the safest and most effective method to quit won't be available. You know, one of the incentives for us to get smokers off.
Well, you know, I think you raised an important question. You're right. This is something we're looking at this session is right now we tax cigarettes, but we do not tax e-cigarette products. And I think there's two things that come up in this debate. One is I do know a lot of people who that is their step down from smoking. And I do appreciate that that is something they find very useful to reduce their use of nicotine. And so I certainly appreciate that and the sensitivity on that issue. I also have been working on the issue around youth, and we are concerned because we're seeing double the number of youth smoking and many more starting to smoke. And I think part of what's popular right now is the vapor products. And so I think we're discussing this issue pretty thoroughly, and we're talking about both sides. But, again, I have a lot of concerns about youth and youth. You know, nicotine is a very addictive substance, and it has a lot of long-term effects, and I'm concerned about that.
I appreciate your concern, too, Julie. This is Senator Kaiser, and I've talked to one of the bill's sponsors and expressed that I really am looking at some kind of medical protocol for people who are trying to quit smoking and are using vapor products to do so. and to exempt those similar to what you would have had as an exemption on medical marijuana. So I don't know if this bill will progress or not this year. It's a new product. We don't have very good science on it, so we are still finding our way on this. I would say that it's not a slam dunk. Anything could happen at this point.
Thank you very much. And if you have a question for the legislators, please press *3 on your phone. Next, we have a follow-up question on oil trains from Kathy in SeaTac. Kathy, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
My question regarding the oil trains is, has the concept of requiring a double hull on the oil, the train tankers, been discussed? Similar to what is required on vessels, on seagoing vessels, the double-hulled tankers. It seems to me that that could be a very, very important way for us to protect our environment in light of a spill.
Thanks for that question. It is an interesting thing that we were able to get the tankers, oil tankers, on the marine waters with double hulls years and years ago. And here we've got all of these oil trains with single shell kinds of tanks. I am not aware, however, of real technology that's been developed to provide what you would call spill-proof tanks on these trains. Even some of the safety improvements that were highly recommended after that terrible accident in Canada has not worked in some of the recent accidents. The awful footage that you've seen from some of these oil train accidents have been with the upgraded oil tanks. So I'm not clear what technology will be most successful in making sure that we don't have a spill or an explosion in an oil train.
Thank you very much. And if you have a question for the legislators, please press *3 on your phone. Next, we're going to change topics a little bit. We have a question from Lori. And Lori has some issues dealing with classroom size and wants to know what we're doing to help. Lori, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
Yeah, I had a question for you. I personally see a direct correlation between classroom size and the ability for our kids to learn in public schools these days. And wanting to know what is actually being done to hopefully decrease the classroom sizes so our teachers are able to instruct in an effective way for the kids in our public schools.
Thank you, Lori. This is Tina Warwell, and I agree with you. I think class size is incredibly important. And there's probably two answers to that to begin with. One is we've been working on a plan to fully fund schools, and part of, you might have heard at McCleary, or part of our next steps was to lower class sizes in the K through third grades as a starting point, and then Initiative 1351 passed, which would lower all class sizes. And I think we're trying to look at this issue. It's a huge investment, and I think that's one of our challenges is how do we begin to do this? But it is a priority, and I think one of the issues that also happens in our districts is where's the capacity? And I know this is something, Karen, do you want to address
that? Sure. Thanks, Tina. I am in the Senate working on what's called the capital budget, and we're putting a proposal forward to enhance school construction in the local districts so that we can provide something like 2,200 new classrooms. You know, we've got schools in the Highline School District where they've got five lunch hours, so to speak, because they don't have enough capacity in that school to have all the kids have lunch at the same time. So we've got a proposal to spend something like $280 million in the next 2 years and 2 years after that and 2 years again after that. So it's almost $1 billion in total to provide new classroom space. But when we build that space, we have to have teachers. We also have the teachers in those classrooms or we don't have education.
Great. Thank you very much. And if you have a question, please press *3 on your phone right now to be connected with a volunteer. And next we have a question from Leonardo in Kent, and he has a question about transportation fees. Are you with us, Leonardo?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, we have this on our license tabs, when we get a license, they have a $20 congestion fee. And then I'd like to know where this money's going to. And also, when King County always has this things about Metro and all this, you know, to sponsor a levy or something to help transportation. And I don't see any improvements, and I want to know where this money's going to.
So this is Representative Gregerson, and I agree with you in that sometimes it's hard to understand where all these fees and these taxes are going to. There's so many different levels of government that has to oversee transportation we have. But I think the exciting part about here in Olympia is we're really talking about a holistic approach in regards to transportation. We're looking at new roads. We're looking at complete systems, complete freight corridor. I know 509 and 167 is very important to us in South King County. There was a port coordination bill 1170 to really make sure that our ports are coordinating to stay progressive and efficient as we look at being an economic engine, and transportation is one of those things. Unfortunately, it costs us money. Our roads are crumbling, and our needs are getting bigger. And I think what you see at home are those fees and taxes. But again, that's what it takes in order for us to have a complete system.
Great. Thank you very much for that. And if you have a question on this or other issues, please press *3 on your phone. Next, we have a question from Bob in Kent, who wants to know what we're doing about tax reform. Bob, are you with us on the line?
I am. Thanks, Karen, Tina, and Mia. I'm really concerned about how unfair our tax system is. I mean, we need reform, and we need tax fairness. And I really support Governor Inslee's suggestion that we have a capital gains tax to kind of spread out the burden.
Well, thank you, Bob. We're really happy to have your call on this, and I absolutely agree. This is Tina Orwell again. We have a very regressive tax system, and it weighs very heavily on working families. And I'm really proud that this year, I know in the House budget, we are looking at a capital gains tax. We're one of the few states that does not have one. I think there's only like three or four that actually do not collect capital gains. And so we are looking at this being part of our package moving forward. And I think it's an important first step, and it's needed as we make these new investments in education.
And I want to reassure everyone, this is Senator Kaiser, to not think of capital gains as an income tax. It is not. Capital gains is a tax on the sale or transaction of stock and other assets, really large transactions. And I don't know exactly what the proposal is coming over from the House. I haven't seen the details. But all the ones that we've looked at have been for the very top 1% of the population, not for the middle class, not for the seniors, not for working people. So don't be concerned that the capital gains tax is yet another burden on the middle class. It is not.
No, and I think, this is Tina again, we are estimating it would impact about 1% of the population at this point.
Thank you very much for that great question on tax reform. And moving us right along this evening, next we have a question from James in Kent and wants to know about a local issue, 509. James, are you on the line with us?
Hi. Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for having the town hall this evening. I appreciate that. Appreciate hearing more from Olympia. I would like to know what the prospects are for getting the 509 project moving and have it get funded.
Well, thank you, James. I think the 509 project is one that we all have been talking about for probably three decades. And what's exciting is it actually has been talked about enough to where the governor included in his budget, the Senate package had it in their package, and then now in the House will be able to continue that conversation forward. 509 has very good statistics. It's shovel-ready. The projects that surround the airport really support the connection between 509 and various cities are all ready to be able to take on this project. So stay tuned. I think it's looking pretty good. I think we're going to see some change this year.
Great. Thank you very much. And if you have a question, please press star 3 on your phone right now. Next, we're going to hear from Tim in Kent, who wants to know what we're doing about higher education. Tim, are you on the line with us?
I am. Thank you. First of all, I want to say thanks to our state legislatures, Karen, Tina, and Mia, for making the outreach into the community. I appreciate staying in touch with your constituency. I obviously am now tied to the community college system and out at Green River in a recent appointment, and have begun to stumble across some things that I struggle a little bit with. I just read a newspaper article that referred to the for-profit colleges like the University of Phoenix are struggling, and sadly, while they only represent 12% of the student population nationally, they represent almost 45% of the default on student loans. And that clearly indicates that instead of using computer instruction, the necessity of keeping a lively community and Voc-Tech system in place. But and with the rising tuition costs, the attempt, obviously, to try and bring that under control did lead to a freezing of tuition, but sadly didn't basically address the costs of actually offering education at the higher ed level. And I'm wondering what the long-term plan is in terms of coping with that.
Well, thank you, Tim. This is Representative Gregerson, and speaking to the higher ed issues is one of those components that we want to make sure that not only are we talking about early learning, but we're talking about the continuum into higher ed. And whether or not it's for-profits or not, we recognize that we need to keep higher ed affordable. We need to make sure that the degrees that we support lead to good jobs, good family wage jobs. And we want to make sure that we're investing in innovations that lead to productivity. And so you'll see many of our conversations, many of our press releases talk about the need for higher ed and the partnership along the entire continuum between crib to career.
Yeah, and I guess, this is Tina, I would add to that. I think this is a great issue for us to talk about. I know I'm incredibly concerned about the amount of debt students have, and I think that's another issue we're going to need to tackle. We are looking at new investments in our budget around student grants and student aids to really help more students who are struggling with those costs. But you raise a very important issue. I think as we invest in education, it's got to include higher education.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, I would like to see us do what other countries do, which is make our higher education system have free or very low-cost tuition. I think that really is the door through which opportunity can be reached for everyone. But with these high tuitions, it's really a stumbling block for folks.
Thank you for that great question on affordable higher education. If you have a question about early learning, K-12, higher ed, or any other issue, please press *3 on your phone and we'll connect you with a volunteer to take your call. And next, we're going to change topics a little bit and talk to Brenda. Brenda has a question about homelessness and what we're doing to combat that. Brenda, are you on the line with us?
I am. And thank you three very much. Thank you three very much for holding the call tonight, taking time out of your evening. The Committee to End Homelessness last Monday had all-day meeting Monday of last week. So knowing that dollars from HEN and TANF are always on the chopping block, how is it shaping up to for regions in the state to be able to get funding to help reduce homelessness?
No, thank you, Brenda. This is a very important question. You know, this is an area I've worked in the past, and it's a big issue for South King County. You know, we talk about this a lot, and I think some of the things that we're trying to do to address it is when you talk about HEN and TANF, and obviously those are, you know, money the state provides to help struggling families, and we are looking at how we're investing and can we increase those investments. Unfortunately, they got significant cuts over the last several years, and that's impacted a lot of families. We also know that there's about 30,000 students and families that are homeless in our school system, and we do have some legislation that would really try to help rapidly house students and their families in a way that keeps them tied to their school districts. There's some models in our state that are having an incredible success. And again, you know, kids need a stable, safe place to really thrive and be successful in school. So again, I think we're looking at this on many fronts. The other thing I'm really proud of, this is the first year we are looking to make an investment on Medicaid for services and housing for people with mental illness. And again, I think that's a really important area for us to invest in as well.
It's really important. We've put about $1 billion into housing itself. But if we don't also provide the services to keep people and their families stable, it's kind of unfortunately not that productive. So we have got to do both sides of this to make our communities healthy and to make our families well-housed and stable.
Thank you very much, an issue that's on all of our minds. And next, we have a question from Claire, and Claire wants to know about our education system and taxes and the basics of democracy. Are you on the line with us, Claire?
I'm on the line. Yes. So today I was in the hardware store, and the person in front of me and the person in back of me were talking about how we just have to get rid of taxes and the world will be a good place. And part of the focus was on these mentally ill people who are leeches on society. I currently take care of the daughter of a friend of mine who is deceased. And she has schizophrenia. I'm doing that for less than $2 an hour, and I'm 75 years old. How do we educate the public so that they understand that part of being a good American is paying taxes so that services can be provided? And
well, Claire, first of all, let me thank you for the hard but very good work that you do helping individuals stay stable and healthy. And it's not easy to provide that direct service. So thank you, and I hope it all goes well for you. And yes, you know, we've had a drumbeat of anti-tax rhetoric and ideology for the last 20 years. But I always come back to the touchstone of this principle. Taxes are what we pay. It is the price of civilization to have a country that we're proud to say treats its people well, that takes care of education and health care and provides for a future with opportunity for all. We can't do that without taxes. And you can look all over the world and compare different countries and different tax rates and see what the real difference is. You can choose to live in, say, Switzerland or Somalia. It's a night and day kind of choice.
And you know what I would add to that, and this is Tina Orwell, is I really feel that a role of our state is to protect the most vulnerable, and we really do need to make investments. And when you're helping people who have mental illness, you know, sometimes they need maybe support, employment or housing or services, but that's to help them reach their potential. And, you know, Claire, I appreciate the work you're doing, and I think these are really important investments that we need to make to help our community be healthy.
And this is Representative Gregerson. And, you know, being the newest elected official, it's scary to talk about taxes because we think it's an evil word. But when you think about your day-to-day life, you expect the lights to turn on. You expect the roads to be safe. And you expect the food that you eat to not harm you or your family. And all those protections require taxes. And so as good stewards of those tax dollars, I think is where reforms start to be part of the conversation. And when we look at the regressive system that we have now, we're the 50th most regressive system. Yes, we have some room for improvement on that, and that's where you've heard some conversations earlier really talking about the excitement in doing that so that we can provide those services to the most vulnerable instead of cutting to the bone where we've been watching for the last few years. So, again, thank you for allowing us to have this conversation tonight.
Thank you, Claire, and thank you, representatives. If you have a question on educating the public about taxes or any other issue, please press star 3 on your phone. That's star 3 to get through to a volunteer to ask your question. And moving us right along this evening, next we have a question from Ron in Des Moines about powder alcohol. Ron, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am.
Please go ahead.
I was curious. Powdered alcohol is soon to hit the shelves, and I was wondering, a lot of states have outlawed powdered alcohol, but doesn't seem like the state of Washington is concerned whatsoever about it.
Oh, absolutely not. We have passed a bill in the Senate. I'm on the Commerce and Labor Committee, and we passed a bill out of that committee to ban powdered alcohol, and we passed it off the floor. So it is in the process of taking on this problem, and it is definitely a very dangerous product, and we don't want it available to the general public, especially to teenagers, because it is so possible to have alcohol poisoning with this product.
Thank you very much. And if you have a question on powdered alcohol or any other issue, please press star 3 on your phone. Next, we have a question from Deborah about birth to five programs. Deborah, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Hi. Okay. I just have a question. I mean, this is a really exciting time. I feel it's an exciting time for early learning in Washington. And I just had a question about, because I hear a lot about pre-K, but I don't hear as much about, you know, 0 to 2, you know, that's a vulnerable age as well. And I just wonder, is there any provision in all these dollars that are going to early learning that is going to support birth and infant and toddlers?
Well, thank you, Deborah. That's a great question, you know, and it's at the University of Washington, we have iLabs, which is leading the country on research, and we know that birth to 3 is a critical window to support families and babies and to really begin to shape them to be healthy and ready to learn. And so we are looking at a bill around Early Start, which is really looking at a broader spectrum. And again, I think a lot of us have the vantage point that we really need to start with early learning, which includes younger learners like you're suggesting and healthy families, and work our way through K-12 and higher education. We do have some services I know that are funded around in-home services support newborns and make sure assessments are done and really, you know, giving parents basic skills to really help their kids advance in reading.
And Deborah, you're absolutely right. It is really from birth on that we have a responsibility to our kids that are we need to make sure we can provide the support and stability they need to be healthy and encourage the progress that they can make. One of the issues I'm still concerned about and working on is paid family leave for new families. When a new baby comes into the family, it's incredibly important that the baby bonds with their parents, with their mom and dad. But we have a situation with people working 2 and 3 jobs and not having any kind of paid time off that we've got people going back into the workplace a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks after giving birth. And that is just not adequate and not a good start for our kids. So if we can figure out a way to provide paid family leave so a new mom and a new family can get grounded and get going in the right direction, I think we would have a much better early start.
You know, this is Representative Gregerson. One of the bills that I was happy to support was by Representative Riccelli, and it was to really allow for those moms and dads who had babies but were in the Medicaid system to be able to have the same testing due to the insurance and maybe Senator Kaiser, you want to speak to this due to the Affordable Care Act, but to increase the funding so that these babies, too, could have the same tests to equal those of private insurers.
Right, the screening tests that we need to make sure our kids are not starting out with some kind of unfortunate physical handicap.
Thank you very much for that answer. Early learning, a concern, I think, on every parent's mind these days. And if you have a question on early learning or higher ed or transportation, please press *3 on your phone right now, and we'll connect you with a volunteer to take your call. Next, we have a question from Rhonda, who is wondering about what kind of support we have for women and female entrepreneurs trying to start out a business here in Washington. Rhonda, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. Good evening.
Hi.
Representative, is Washington considering any tax incentives for first-time women entrepreneurs, basing that on the fact that our economy is recovering and very quickly here in Washington? Many states are already offering this to women that are hoping to buy a existing business or start a business, and I'm hoping this is being looked at by you three wonderful leaders in Olympia.
Thank you so much. I think we do have an office in our state, an office of women and business assistance for women and minority businesses and that are owned. And we've got in some of our statutes contracting language to require that contracts, when we are purchasing goods and services and building things, that we include and incorporate bids from small businesses that are owned by women and minority contractors. So it's a small effort, but it is certainly one that has our attention.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I just want to say there is some legislation that is looking at this issue to strengthen micro businesses, and I know that's being, I think, passed the House, but was being looked at.
Great. Thank you very much. And if you have a question about small business support or any other issue, please press *3 on your phone right now, and we'll get you into the volunteer. Next, we have a question from Susan in Federal Way about our mental health system. Susan, please go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if there's any hope of getting any of the funding back that was cut during the recession for the mental health system, because it lost quite a bit during that time.
Well, Susan, that is a great question. And I have to tell you, it's one of our priorities this session in addition to education. And you're right, we did cut back. A lot of non-Medicaid services were cut, which were around crisis services. We made a $31 million investment last year, and this year, I know on the House side, it's looking closer to $100 million, and it's got to invest in a number of things. It has to have inpatient capacity for people that need more emergent care. Right now, a lot of people are ending up in emergency rooms and not getting the more acute care they need. It's also going to make investments in outpatient care. And so I think there's a number of new investments and also around affordable housing and services, and I think it's really needed. I think, again, you're right, we cut back, and we've seen a lot of people homeless and in our emergency rooms, and we really need to step up and make these investments.
And I would say that it's a nonpartisan issue. We have a real consensus in both houses of the legislature this year that we must step up and provide the services to our mentally ill citizens who have been really left to fend for themselves much too much.
Thank you very much. And if you have a question about mental health funding or any other issue, please press *3 on your phone right now. Next, we have a question from Ruth, who's been waiting very patiently in CTAC, about COLA and teacher salaries. Ruth, you're on with the representatives.
I want to know what's being done for the Education Association in the Highline District.
Hi, Ruth. This is Tina Orwell. You know, I know we're going to be making a lot of investments in education this year. I know one of the things that hasn't happened in the last 6 years are COLAs for teachers, cost of living raises, and we are looking at that this year in addition to investments our school needs, the full day K, lowering class sizes, and additional things. We need our teachers to be supported, and we think new investments are needed.
And I would echo that in the Senate. This is Senator Kaiser. I believe that we have agreement to fund the cost of living increases for teachers in this budget. We don't have a budget quite yet, but I think we have agreement on that one thing.
Well, and I this is Mia, and you know, I want to make sure too that teachers recognize that we are very supportive of the whole wraparound system. We recognize that we want to reform the common sense assessment. We want to make sure that these are easier for our teachers to be able to host. And you'll see, I think it was Representative Rigdahl came forward, that's going to save the state money so we don't have to implement as many tests. And also dual credits, or excuse me, dual language, and making sure that teachers are supported in professional support and being able to have more dual language in the system. So many reasons why teachers are the backbone to our K-12 system.
Thank you very much. And if you have a question about education, teachers, or anything else, please press *3 on your phone right now. Next, we have a question from Rose about pollution in our state. Rose, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, Karen, Tina, and Mia.
Hi, Rose.
Hi, Rose.
Tina, a few weeks ago I mentioned to you an air quality study that was done in California around LAX, and what it showed was a very wide disbursement of the airplane pollution across the county down there. You know that we did a study in the late 90s here. But that was something that the wind patterns was something we didn't really look at. So the University of Washington did the study in L.A. They can do one up here for less than $50,000. And I would like, when the session is over, to set up a meeting with the university professor and a couple of local people, so only three or four people plus the three of you, so that we could talk about how we might move forward and do this to have a more complete picture of the health of King County.
Well, thank you, Rose. This is Tina, and I really appreciate the work you've done. And, you know, I do worry about air quality in our area, and we know we have a high incidence of asthma. I have a son with asthma, and many families face this. And I think that would be a great next step for us to meet with the University of Washington and look at this. I think King County Department of Health did some research in this area, and we should probably consult with them too. But obviously having the airport in our community has a huge impact, and certainly air quality is one of the areas we should be reviewing.
Hi, Rose. This is Mia. I want to let you know that this is very much on the forefront of our conversations as the Port of Seattle is unfolding their SAMP, which is a Sustainable Airport Master Plan. And so that will definitely be part of what does their social responsibility come from. They're wanting to define that. I'm also on the Aviation Caucus here in Olympia, and it's bipartisan in both the Senate and the House, and we're starting to talk about interim. What can we do during the interim? And I think that this is one of those things that we want to discuss and make sure that there is ways to be able to measure this. All local communities have comprehensive plans, and that can be called out within their comprehensive plans too, to identify how to measure these pollutants.
Thank you very much. And if you have a question for your representatives, please press *3 on your phone. And next, we have a question from Jeanne, who's been waiting very patiently in Des Moines, about our social service, our safety net, and cuts that have been made. Please go ahead.
This is Jeanne from Des Moines, and thank you so much for having the forum. And I am interested in the homeless, of course, and food banks, senior services, and just squeezing a few more funds out of the legislature for all these things that we really need in our area.
Well, thank you, Jane. This is Tina. And, yes, you know, it's something, the safety net, I worry about. We obviously, through the recession, did a lot of cuts to our safety net as families' needs were growing, and it is something we've looked at. We make investments in food dollars here at the state, and it's really a great investment because we leverage federal dollars every time when we invest in these areas too. And so I know I'm strongly supporting in the budget to make sure we're fully funding money that goes to our food banks, and you know, it also has summer programs that really support kids as well, and it's important to have these year-round programs.
Well, and also the senior services. It's been a real struggle to maintain the services to all of our seniors. Currently, our area agencies on aging are really having a difficult time managing the caseload that they have, because as you know, more and more people are getting older. Some people call it the silver tsunami, and I personally hate that term because I'm one of them. So it's something we're working hard on. I'm happy to say we succeeded in passing a program called Community First Choice and CFCO, and by passing that, we are able to have more matching funds from the federal government to provide services to individual seniors and developmentally disabled citizens who need some direct services. So we're going to do the best we can to maximize those federal funds to get those matched services.
Thank you very much. And if you have a question, please press star 3 on your phone. We have time for a couple more questions this evening. Next, we have John from Normandy Park with a question about reproductive health. John, are you on the line?
Yes, thank you for holding this town hall. My question is regarding House Bill 1647, which I believe all three of you support. Among other things, as I understand it, this bill would require health insurance plans which cover maternity care to also provide coverage for elective abortions. Now, I was just wondering if we are to infer that these are considered to be morally equivalent propositions and whether the bill has any provisions to address the concerns of those who might not want to cover elective abortion. Thank you.
Thank you, John, for that question. I think what you're referring to is what's known as the Reproductive Parity Act, and it simply says that any insurance company that provides reproductive services of maternity care or birth must also provide reproductive care for a woman who chooses to terminate. So it is a issue of individual choice. It isn't a mandate for anyone to make any particular choice at all. It simply says that the insurance company must cover whatever the individual's choice is. And in fact, there are no increased costs for having full choice.
Thank you very much. And next, moving along this evening, we have a question from Guy in SeaTac who wants to know about corporations and what kind of taxes they pay. Guy, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
This is in response to an earlier comment about taxes and the mentally ill and the most vulnerable, and also the working poor. It seems to me, and I applaud the work thus far on getting the minimum wage up in Seattle and the movement clear across the country, but to me, it seems that if we pay a living wage, that we won't have to subsidize companies, because that's basically what we're doing is we're filling in where companies refuse to tread, as it were. I realize that there are certain parties, excuse the pun, but that don't want to help or don't feel responsible in helping the most vulnerable and homeless, but my comment being that, and I just read a quote from President Roosevelt basically saying that those companies that can't afford to pay their workers a living wage should probably not be permitted to do business in this country. Thank you for having the forum.
Thank you. That was a very refreshing call. I really appreciate your comments, and, you know, I don't think I could have said it any better myself. I appreciate it.
Well, it's so nice to hear such a friendly voice, Uncle Guy. And I just wanted to say that we're fighting very hard to make sure that the working middle class has the opportunity to thrive on its own. And that you hear a lot of these questions tonight about homelessness and the mental illness. And the problem is that the very wealthy 1% are not sharing with the rest. And I think it's our job as good stewards to make sure that more people have access. Everyone deserves safe and sick leave, a minimum wage, and equal pay.
Yeah, I think it's an issue of this fairness that we're sharing the investments needed in our communities and states.
And I am excited to share that next Monday, the Senate Commerce and Labor Committee will hear the bills that were passed by the House already to increase the minimum wage, to have equal pay for equal work, and to have paid sick and safe leave. So all three of these really important bills are finally getting a full hearing in the public domain on Monday in Olympia, and you can probably watch it on TVW if you'd like. The hearing will be at 1:30 in the afternoon. I'll be there because I'm on that committee, and I'm excited that we're going to have this opportunity.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Guy, for that great question. Unfortunately, we are out of time for more questions this evening, but please, if you have a question, stay on the line because you'll have a chance to leave a message with your representatives, and they or their wonderful legislative assistants will get back to you as soon as possible. So thank you to everyone who called in. Thank you to everyone who stayed on the line, and we hope to do this again, and I'm going to turn it over to the legislators for some brief closing remarks.
First of all, I want to thank everybody who's joined us tonight. It's so refreshing. Let me just tell you, it's so refreshing to get questions from what I would call real people. We have a lot of lobbyists that we deal with who are always asking us questions and pointing out this and that piece of information that we might not really fully trust. And it is a wonderful thing to have direct access to our constituents through this technology. I am so thankful you called in and tuned in and are interested in your government. It's an honor to do this work, and thank you so much for your participation.
And this is Tina. Thank you for calling in. If you have additional questions, please feel free to email us as well. We look and read our emails all the time and would love to hear from you. And again, thank you for your feedback tonight.
Yeah, I'd just like to say thank you so much for the opportunity to serve. And oftentimes we're down here in a bubble, and it's great to hear your voices while we're here in Olympia. We have a district office back at home. We're just a phone call away. Whether we are able to speak with you in person or personally tonight, please know that we will be looking at those questions that you have, and we will be getting back to you.